Please the court. Good morning. My name is Charles Courtney, and I represent the defendant in this case. Excuse me. We had three issues covered in the brief, and different than counsel just did, I'd like to address a different issue. We raised the issue of the enhancement under 3C1.1 of the sentencing guidelines. There were two potential bases for the district court to enhance my client's sentence under 3C1.1. One of them was a false statement he made to police officers upon his arrest. He made up a story about having loaned his car to some J. Boo or James or someone like that. He also admitted at trial on direct examination that that was untrue. That was then confirmed in cross-examination that that was a lie. He simply made that story up. The district court at the disposition hearing indicated that that statement alone made to law enforcement officers was sufficient to enhance the defendant's sentence under 3C1.1. We would argue to the court that that's simply not true. That was a statement that was not made under oath. It was made to a law enforcement agent. The application notes to Section 3C1.1, specifically Note 5, indicates that that generally is not the type of comment or the type of statement that would consist of an obstruction of justice. The exception is if Note 4G would apply, which is a statement that is made that significantly impacts or impedes an investigation. Testimony at trial was clear that's not what happened here. Deputy Marshal Newland testified, in fact, when he heard this story, he couldn't even say under oath whether even he did anything about it. He said he may have made a call to the Illinois State Police to check out the nickname, but he couldn't be sure that he'd done that. It was evident on June 20th when my client was arrested that Marshal Newland thought he had the right man. He thought he had the passenger in this vehicle. Nothing further was done to investigate that, and I think on that basis the application of the two-level enhancement for that statement is not supported by the record. The other potential basis for the enhancement is, as pointed out by counsel for the government, is the fact that the defendant may have perjured himself at trial. The government points out that under USA versus Dunnigan, clearly a perjurous statement would support an enhancement under 3C1.1. We would ask you to consider, however, the district court's handling of that issue at the disposition hearing. There is no finding in that disposition record of any specific fact or even any specific statement or testimony rendered by the defendant that the court uses as a basis for that enhancement. What Judge Steele did is he went through with counsel the fact that the defendant has a right to demand a trial, the defendant has a right to testify at trial, indicates the defendant has a right to deny he committed the crime, he has a right even to deny that he was present. Then he makes the statement that what the defendant cannot do is make up a scenario relevant to the events that occurred at trial. With no further explanation, he then finds basis for the two-level enhancement. It's impossible from my review of the record, frankly, to understand what Judge Steele meant by that comment. At initial blush, what I thought he meant was the fact there was an allegation by the government that Mr. Griffin convinced a minor, Mr. Windham, to come into court and testify that he, in fact, was the passenger in that vehicle and not the defendant. That's not consistent, however, when the court denied the enhancement for the use of the minor in the offense. The government asked for an enhancement of two levels for apparently recruiting the minor to come into court and make up this story. The court found, Judge Steele found, that there wasn't sufficient evidence to tie that to the defendant, but then makes a blanket statement that he made up a scenario relative to the events, and on that basis he would have perjured himself. The Dunnigan case that's cited by the government contains a statement that the district court should make specific factual findings on the individual elements that it believes constitute the perjury and should make those separately and clearly. We would submit to this court there's simply no evidence, there's no record made as to why the court would have attached that two-level enhancement in this particular case. Your Honor, it's important when tied to the other issues we did raise in the brief, this is a close case. This is not a case like Dunnigan, where in Dunnigan you had six people come into court and testify to extensive, substantial drug dealings with the defendant. Ms. Dunnigan then took the stand and said, I didn't do it. I never did any of these things that are alleged. It's not what we have in this case. In this case, what we have is exactly the opposite. We have five or six defense witnesses who come in to explain the defendant's whereabouts during the evening in question. We actually have two individuals. One of them was the driver in the vehicle who admits to the commission of a federal offense by his testimony, indicating, again, my client was not present in the vehicle. Mr. Windham, who is the minor that comes in, then testifies, in fact, he is the one who committed the offense. He is the one who was in this vehicle. So this is a little bit different than the case in Dunnigan, where the district court at least made a blanket statement as to why it was finding the defendant's comments to have been perjurious. This is exactly the opposite. In this case, to find that the defendant committed perjury would require the court, frankly, to disbelieve all of the testimony in this case other than the technical.
Well, Mr. Courtney, what about the judge's reference to the defendant conjuring up the Jabo story?
I think His Honor is absolutely correct. The Jabo story in and of itself was an attempt to mislead the police, but it was a statement made at the time of his arrest, was not under oath. For that statement to support the two-level enhancement, it was incumbent on the government to then show that that statement had a substantial or significant impact on the investigation. By Marshall Newland's testimony that he never even checked it out, he never did anything with it, there was no impact on the investigation. It was government's belief at that point that they had both of the individuals in that vehicle. With regard to the other issues, I'd rely on the brief if anyone has any questions.
All right. Thank you, Ms. Courtney.
Thank you.
Mr. Rapper?
Thank you, Your Honor. The Supreme Court in Dunnigan indicated that certainly was the preferred method for a court in finding the obstruction based on perjury to basically track the elements of perjury. And although the court did not lay out the elements of perjury, they seem to me, based on the opinion, to be basically four: witness testifying under oath, false testimony as to a material matter with full intent. Now, this was a one-issue trial that took basically no more than a day. The only issue was who was the passenger. So I think the brevity of the district court's ruling has to be looked at in the context that this is really a very simple trial. And the trial was about who was the passenger, was it the defendant or this juvenile by the name of Boo. So when the judge says that he found that the defendant had basically conjured up this story, it was very clear from the context of the case that what the judge regarded him as doing is making up a scenario about the material element in the case. So it's very clear that you have a witness testifying under oath, that's not in dispute, that there's false testimony, the district court found that. As to material matter, that's implicit from the very facts of the case with full intent. And looking at the full intent issue, I think you look at the story that the defendant offered in trial was not that Jabo was the one who drove the car, but rather the story was that Mr. Russell drove the car and that this juvenile by the name of Boo was really actually the passenger. That was a different story than what was told to the police, which was another made-up scenario. In short, I think the record's very clear that that there was a factual basis for the district court's finding that there was perjured testimony under this court's standard, that this court would have to find the district court clearly erroneous in order to reverse the two-point enhancement. So I think that element is clear. As to the other two branches of the brief, I'm happy to rest on the brief. I think that there was ample evidence to support the conviction. It's an eyeball-to-eyeball identification. The court has no further questions. That concludes my presentation.
Thank you, Mr. Weaver. Ms. Courtney?
Very briefly, Your Honor, the whole purpose in Dunnigan of having a factual basis and explanation of why the district court's making this determination is to avoid an erroneous enhancement. This gentleman's in a situation which would apply to a multitude of defendants. Anytime there is a mistaken ID, if a defendant alleges a mistaken ID, if that defendant testifies and a police officer testifies contrary to that, you're in effect, you've basically got an automatic enhancement of two levels. I don't think that's what's intended. I think that's why the Dunnigan court asked the court to take a stronger look.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Courtney. Thanks, Robert. The case